So, and we had a bit of a discussion on the admin group for Nicebug that one way or another it would be cool, and I'm actually throwing in words because this is what my thoughts are. I didn't express everything on the list, but basically our talk list is really dynamic. It's very serious. A lot of people get a lot out of it. I mean, I was at Shmuel a few months ago, and there's some guy who's all involved in IETF stuff with these IPv6, and he's like, oh, I love your list. You guys have the best list around for, you know, BSC discussions, the system manager, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, can I join it? And I'm like, yeah, it doesn't really matter what your error code is. You could join the list. But if we could figure out a way, and maybe this is a crappy meeting tonight, I don't know. But if we could figure out a way to take some of the way the discussions happen on the talk list and bring them, say, into our meetings, maybe once every three meetings, to actually get some of the dynamic discussions that actually do take place on our list. But because a lot of times, if you notice our list, people go, oh, what's the best serial solution, blah, blah, blah. What's the cheap serial solution? So then Michael comes around and says, well, I got an Octopus with a Socus box running OpenBSD and a CF card and blah, blah, blah. Oh, that's a great solution. But when I did that, I couldn't figure out which TTY was which. And so things like that start happening. And I think in many ways, that's been our best accomplishment is a dynamic list that people take seriously, which, as I said before, is, you know, full of a lot of expertise. There's a lot of actual, like, names in the BSD community on the list, and there's people who aren't even names but are heavies, you know, doing heavy things. But there isn't a lot of RTFMs, which is kind of nice, having that balance, because that's unique in the technical community. It's very unique in the open source community, and it's fabulously unique in the BSD community. You know, you don't have that. You have a good professional tone that's technical. It's not composed of a bunch of home, you know, how do I connect my ADSL, PPOE, blah, blah, blah stuff. But it also is very serious and not condescending and patronizing like so many of the lists, which I'm sure, I mean, you know, there's a couple of lists in particular I'm thinking of recently which got really nasty with the condescension. So if we could start finding a way to actually start reflecting that, I think in maybe every other meeting we have or every three meetings, we're still going to have speakers. Next meeting, by the way, is Mickey. Who doesn't know who Mickey is? Who knows who Mickey is? Mickey at OpenBSD. Mickey did a meeting on PA Risk, HPPA Risk, about like a year and a few months ago. He's now in Berlin. He's actually, I think he did the first commit to OpenBSD. In 95. But Mickey is going to be back in New York, unfortunately crashing at my apartment with his buddy. So it's going to be like a week of a lot of vodka. But he's going to be here along with another guy he's working with in Berlin, and it's actually the firm that does firewalling. And Mickey's going to be talking about his spiel. His other guy's going to be talking about what he's doing. So that's going to be, you know, again, should be a very interesting meeting. And that will be back at the Apple Store as far as we know. We have to see. We think their construction's done. They don't really know what they're doing with a lot of things, Apple, right now. And construction is definitely on the list of their confusions. But anyway, on that note, and then right after the meeting, we're going to be at the Grand Saloon on 23rd between Lex and 3rd, which is just two blocks down on the south side of the street, more towards 3rd Avenue than Lex. But so what we're going to do tonight, we have a couple of people who have, like, little spiels to talk about some of the things they're doing, you know, with related to the BSDs, and also a couple of questions and so on. But let's try to actually take some of the tone and the discussion that takes place on the talk list and bring it into our meetings on a regular basis. Anyway, I guess Bjorn can start off. So give us an overview of what you want
to... Well, first off, we have some wireless accounts, so if anybody wants to get access, has a laptop or anything, okay. I apologize for this format. I originally did a keynote and it exported to QuickTime and this PC doesn't support it. So as a backup, I exported a PowerPoint and it's going to mangle it up. I know because I already looked at it. It worked.
Should we turn the light?
No, it's the light on, right?
Should we turn the light off?
Huh?
Okay.
Which one?
So I used to work here at Baruch, and they have a great setup. They have 32, about the size of 32 Unix servers, screen environments to play with stuff. Most of the servers, about four or five of the servers are either Red Hat or Solaris, but the rest are all FreeBSD. And so got really familiar with working on FreeBSD and kind of got used to it. I just got a new job in last month, and the place I'm working at now is all Linux. So I kind of went through and kind of came up with some things I miss about FreeBSD. And these are like pretty much utilities. I kind of feel like the way that it's designed, like FreeBSD seems to be like it seems to be like a different approach to how it relates to how the machine is actually operating, like what metrics you can get from it, and how you can get it in context. Like, can you get it? Is it all at once, or is it can you get it with history? And this is compared to like Linux. It just has a different approach. I don't know if it's because people that design it have a different background or what, but basically what I'm going to go through is just some of the things that I've found, and maybe if you guys have any ideas about how to do these things better, hopefully you can get some good discussion about that. So first off, I went through these four tools. I don't know if you guys are all probably familiar with these tools already, but the first one is, NetStat. On FreeBSD, NetStat kind of displays, like, you know, very easily with a NetStat-W1, it shows you in your history as well as, like, the current time. So you can tell right away, like, is network, you know, is it just, like, a blip right now that's happening, or is it a history of actual network traffic that's going through? And on Linux, I don't really know what to use yet except for SAR, which is basically just a historical tool. And NetStat-W is not really like a...
We have like two
local inboxes.
IP trap is pretty cool.
IP trap.
Yeah, IP trap is pretty cool.
Cool. And that tells you like a historical as well as current moment?
No, I just sort of like, well, I haven't tried to get through that. I just want to see how much data was being transferred per second, which you can't do under Linux.
Mm-hmm.
It has this like crazy GUI that like shows it all to you in like curses mode, which is kind of cool.
Oh, cool.
You know, but yeah.
Okay.
So if you're maybe able to get that out.
Right. What's the name of it again?
IP trap.
IP trap.
So, we'll go to the next one then. Alright, another thing, IOSTAT. I don't know if you use IOSTAT on FreeBSD versus Linux, but I have the same problem, where it's like, on FreeBSD, it shows me history, and on Linux, you get one big shot, and this screen just gets repeated, updated over and over. All the devices are on the left-hand side versus FreeBSD, where it kind of gives you... Oops. Okay, previous IOSTAT gives you over time the different metrics. So it's kind of interesting. It's like from what I've kind of found is that a lot of the tools on Linux seem to be like to show you instantaneous information, but as far as trying to get historical stuff, it's not really built for that. And for me, it's like I usually need historical stuff to show where the state was at, because I can't usually remember like a whole screen of little numbers and things. VMstat is very similar on Linux and FreeBSD. The only thing I have to complain about is that on FreeBSD you get down to like these metrics for paging system. You get reclaims and your scan rate and how many pages in and out you get. On Linux it's more about on Linux you get more of it's a lot simpler of a thing. You just get blocks in, blocks out, swaps. It doesn't give you the fine grained control. Similar to Solaris, it seems like Solaris has a little bit better beats both FreeBSD and Linux on this. But that's not too much of a problem with that. The other thing, too, is ifconfig. On ifconfig for FreeBSD, it seems to be very easy to like tell what state of your media, if you're in like full duplex or half or whatever. What all your other settings are too, versus like Linux, it seems to be more about basically network statistics, and to kind of what the speed is of your traffic, you have to use this control or something.
On Linux, it's MII-2.
Okay.
And then I think MII that tool and then just in the interface that you want to visit from, I think you can get, you know, it's duplex and all that other stuff.
Okay.
Cool.
What was that?
You can
set it that way, too.
Okay.
Alright. And then, let's see. Okay, and then we'll go on configuration files. There's a couple configuration files that I really geared me on FreeBSD that I don't find quite as easy on Linux. First thing is usyslog. The other option you have is rotate log, the log rotate on Linux. And it's just new syslog, it's all laid out very, like, you know, you can see rows of programs or log files that you need to rotate. Versus on previous, or on Linux, it's more about you have to kind of script it how you want the log rotation to happen. And then rc.conf, there really isn't a comparison to that. And there's sysconfig, which is, you have like a lot of little files in it that you have to go through and edit. Doesn't give you the centralization. And then make.conf, I don't think there's a new equivalent to that. It's pretty nice just to be able to, like, you know, have the same settings for all your ports and even compiles and everything.
I know Gentoo does that, right?
Gentoo, okay. And then just some miscellaneous stuff that I kind of like endeared me to FreeBSD as well. There's a Perl abstraction, you know, you can have Perl or you can not have it. It's up to you what version you want. Mail.conf, I don't know if there's an easy way to, like, to replace the sendmail on Linux, but it's pretty easy to do that on FreeBSD. And then
it actually depends very much on the distribution.
Okay.
And Gentoo does
it. You can do it, it's similar.
From RPM, it's more of a BSD.
How do you change the Perl versions? Because I'm new to BSD and I started implementing it in the company, and I'm forced to do like port downgrading to, because it's saying it requires like a Perl 5.8.7 or have 5.8.8 installed.
Oh. So you probably have like a package that needs it still, right? Is that what?
Usually,
there's a couple of things. Like, usually you can either try upgrading the port by using like port upgrade, or
I'm still using port manager because it was, you know, checking for dependencies and having the most accessible.
Cool.
But I have to use the try port downgrade.
Okay.
Yeah. Seems to work. I thought there was an easy solution.
The port doesn't. There's no upgrade for the port to up the dependency, or
no.
But you have to go down. That's what you're talking
about.
Yeah,
I have to go down.
No, it's going down in a version of Perl.
Yeah.
Because yeah,
is there a way I can, like, I don't know, there like a centralized file that will be able to edit and just say, you know, point it to this Perl.
Well, there's use variables in make.conf too that you can set for what Perl like points to. It's like user bin Perl is like pointing to whatever you set. It's like there's like four or five different, like, they're all like usually together. But whenever you like upgrade the Perl, it always, like, I always have to go through and clean up my make.conf because it'll be like use Perl version 5.6 and then use Perl version 5.8 and then it'll go back down to use Perl version 5.6. But it's like that. It's in make.conf, and that's where you can set which Perl version you're using. But if the port itself is used, because the thing is, Perl is like a port. So it's not. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the port itself is looking for that version of Perl, then it's gonna the port itself. You could even just edit the port in the make file and just kind of could change the dependency, or even like PackageDB might be able to do it in there too. So just, you know, have a point to the new one. You think it really needs like the old version? Is it pretty tied down there? Yeah, so should be all right. So the other thing too is booting. You know, you have Grub and Lilo, and you can do some pretty like interesting things with the programs. But it's just something about the boot prom and in FreeBSD. It's very like Solaris open firmware like. So I think it seems like it's based off of open firmware. It allows you to, like, you know, unload kernels, load kernels, and it does that really easily. It's not like you can't do that with Grub or anything, but it just seems to be do that a lot easier. So,
what?
I think that's it. That's all I had.
for short term. Going
back to the syslog, I know that a lot of people have moved Linux or used to a certain one. I don't know, because Linux is the kernel and anything else that ship with it, it's whatever the distro is.
Right.
If you have the option to install it, but I know syslog and G is really popular.
Yeah,
but this is more for log rotation, though. That's the as opposed to like.
But new syslog. Is new syslog. Is there a new syslog change with syslog ng or not?
Yeah.
There is? Really? What do you know anything about? Because who here has used syslog ng?
I actually started using it on it.
Still come.
So I'm not sure. It doesn't matter. Some of the changes are. It gives you a little bit more fine grained control over your log facilities. Another cool thing is that you're actually. What happens is if you have a centralized syslog server and that server goes down, rather than just discarding all the messages that occur on the other host, it actually starts to buffer them for a while until the host comes back online, which is really nice. Another thing, the article about how it's actually doing is actually tunneling syslog over Syscano, so you have a secure,
right.
Secure encryption layer and then streaming back to the host.
I was evaluating new syslog ng or syslog ng, and I ended up going with this program called Mini R Syslog. You heard of it at all? It's Mini R Syslog. It's this other. It's a lot simpler of a program. It doesn't allow you to do as much many things with it. But the thing I picked it for is just for remote logging. It basically does active rotation instead of just rotating it after the. It doesn't like check it. It actually like when it logs it out, it logs it out to a file based on the date stamp, and then it if it goes over a certain size, it won't log anymore. So if you're worried, if you want to keep your logs, it's probably not the best thing. But if you're worried about like maxing your disk space, you don't want to like worry about it too much. You can it's a pretty good program for that.
I was just looking. It's not IP traf isn't in the ports.
Oh no, it's for it's very
no. I know. I looked at the website. They only mentioned Linux, but I didn't know if somebody put it in the ports yet. FreeBSD ports,
yeah.
But
But you know what though? I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
You're actually
right. I mean, like as far as I saw, it was one of those things where like shows you like a screen interface. It doesn't like dump the stats. Yeah. That was driving me nuts too on Linux. I I have a load balancer, and I was just like, well, I want so much traffic going through it, and there was nothing that was gonna show it to me.
Yeah.
So it was pretty. I mean, once I installed that, I got this like really cool cursor screen, and I was like. I wonder how I
type
this into a file.
There's a thing for BSD called IF talk. That's the same thing.
Yeah, interface talk.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Well, actually, one of the I don't know if people know about it, but one of the things that came up, Richard Beitlick, the guy with security man, everybody knows. It's like Beijtlich, right? Anyway, Richard came up with an idea that Michael actually did most of the implementation on. But on our website, if you go to our site, there's a port request application. And actually, you want to bring up the web and show?
Yeah.
Just it's in one of the web apps. I mean, whatever. People have mixed feelings about web apps versus other types of apps. But we basically put this up. I haven't looked at it in the past, like, week or two. But it's a location for someone to put up a post, a request, for a web app, for an application to be ported to, like, FreeBSD, for instance. Yeah, it's just under, port request. But basically, if you scroll down, you'll see on the right, you know, who the submitter is, who's requesting it, a link to the packages, to the application's website, you know, dependencies, things like that. And the idea is that we'll be in a position where, just like a lot of applications like DMessageD have done, actually something of like a central repository so that people have requests who actually could give some feedback for anybody who's going to actually create a port out of it could have a basis to work from. And like, to be honest, at this point, the way to really make this thing move, I mean, it's great. We have a whole bunch of requests and so on in the past 2 months. I mean, Richard certainly has taken advantage of it twice, three times now. But what I need to do is I need to talk to some of a couple of people in FreeBSD land, actually Murray Stokely, who, you know, actually, that's how I met Al. Murray Stokely.
Oh,
but like Scott Long, for instance, Scott Long would be someone who actually would give, I mean, even though he's involved in a lot of other things, he's certainly someone who would give this, and, you know, he knows what we're doing and knows a lot of the activities that we've had so far. So he's someone I keep in contact with about what we're doing. So getting people who are actually involved in the ports to start centrally involved to be aware of this and how it's operating. I don't know actually where we've gotten yet. It's great we have a nice web app, but it's not like the message where, like, everybody either loves it or hates it knows about it. I don't know if yet we have the publicity around it. I mean, like, D-Message D has been great. Why don't we actually click on D-Message D for a minute? Because
pull request does get a lot of traffic.
It gets a lot of traffic. But the question is it actually being used for people to actually implement ports?
You could make this to mass gateway and annoy all the port people, and they might like it.
Yeah, I mean, see, that's the question. It's like, you know, how do we actually bridge it? So I was going to ask Scott or somebody, be like, how do we do this? How do you want us to? Because D-Message D, a lot of people love this application, and we even have it on the back of one of our T-shirts, a D-Message. But
arguably the coolest T-shirt ever screened.
And that was my idea, by the way, because you didn't like it. The idea is that people are uploading D-Messages from, you know, all different platforms, from all the BSDs and blah, blah, blah. So you have it on your Socrates, you have it on your Jornada, you have it on whatever. And it's really been great. A lot of people like this application. A lot of people know, if you go to, like, the conferences and you talk about, mention nice book, people go, oh, D-Message D is great. You have other people, and like one of the names that you might associate with OpenBSD land, who thinks that web apps in general are complete crap and hates our D-Message D, and actually was quite carefully insulting me as he said it was a great, it's good what we do, but he doesn't like it because it's a web app. So there's different opinions on it. We're still trying to, like, get to the point where there's opinions about port requests, to be honest, I think, at this point.
To be fair, D-Message is not geared for...
Developers?
It's not geared for front office. It's for us to look up things that, you know, before I buy a machine, is it supported?
Yeah. No, absolutely. Now, I guess... Al's here and Max. Max, you're gonna talk a bit about OkCupid and everything, and then you have and also try to recruit.
Yeah.
This is like 1999 again. You know?
Yeah, no, we're getting funding and like it's crazy. Like this is a good time to like hook up with us. We're doing a lot of cool stuff with FreeBSD, really cool environment. No politics, just work. It's awesome. And we're taking it for a limit. am I up or?
Well, if Max, you have a question. What is yours, like, going to be something that opens up a long discussion, or is it going to be like yes or no, and then go home? Probably, even though we never do that, but
no,
we might with you.
It was the FreeBSD joint project directory I'm getting in question with, and it doesn't work for me. It really doesn't work good. The only thing that I can talk about, actually, I stack mostly authentication for any of the daemons into Postgres database.
Okay, wait, let's do this. Should we, maybe Al, you go first, and maybe you give a spiel on what you're doing, because I think Max's thing is about integration between the BSDs and Active Directory,
yeah.
And Samba... 3. So I think maybe, to me, that's like the most open-ended question you could ever ask. But maybe Al starts off, he could do his spiel, and then we can move on to that, and then other questions people have.
Yeah. So I don't have any slides, because I don't ever have the time. But OkCupid started about 3 years ago. It's the biggest free online dating site, with about 250,000 users, growing a lot. It's interesting to see because initially, because it's a free site and it's kind of cute, our user base was like, 18 to 25. Now we're actually going to look at matches and things like that, and find people that are older, which is cool. So our user base is growing like really fastly. We are talking to some people who want to give us money. We're hanging up on them, telling them we want more. Cool. We're hiring. We're looking for system administrators and C++ programmers, good ones. So, I'm I could get some info about me. I'm Alfred Perlstein. I'm a previously developer. So, which makes working there so much simpler, I guess, or something like that. basically we are like 99.9% FreeBSD shop. We have about 30 machines. We run some custom RPC-based solutions. We run a custom web server for the most part. We squeeze every bit of performance out of our systems as possible. We have a MySQL backend. It's pretty much all open source. The whole site is just pretty cool. Let's see, what else? Everything is like, you know, sort of infinitely scalable, and we're pretty proud of the whole architecture. So basically, if anyone has any questions or wants to, is looking for employment, you should send your resume to alfred@lokicuba.com or alfred@freebsd.org and say you were at the NYC bug, and that gives you an extra bonus point. And you'll probably get, if you're a good match, you'll likely get a response back asking to take a little online quiz that just, you know, gives us a baseline of what your skill set is. And then we'll go from there.
I have a good question.
Yeah.
Being as it were a technical forum, without giving away trade secrets, how do you squeeze performance? I know some of it's going to be your game.
There's nothing that's too crazy, basically. We have our own version of what's called Memcache. Have you guys heard of that?
If you're heading the whiteboard, I encourage
you. Yeah.
Use it. I don't want to have a trade secret about the whiteboard. Just
don't put the company in.
Yeah. So basically what we have is we have extremely aggressive caching and really well-written code for the most part. We use a variation of something called Memcache. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's basically a distributed memory-based cache. So you basically set up some masters. So there's like redundancy. So these are masters. And then, you know, you can just start running on all your other nodes more copies of this program called DSCC. That's Dirt Simple Distributed Cache is what it's called. One of the things that's cool about working for us, the guy who wrote the DSCC thing, his name is Max Krohn. You might not have heard of him, but you might have heard of a program that is a generated computer science paper. So it would basically generate, you know, you'd give it a couple of keywords and it would just generate a paper that's a layperson read as like, you know, like an actual computer science paper, but if you actually had any kind of technical proficiency, you're like, this is complete bullshit. And on top of that, it would make graphs, like plotting like megahertz versus degrees Celsius, and like pie charts and all kinds of crap. It was great. And they actually wound up submitting papers to various conferences, and one of them actually got accepted, and they tried to go there, and there was a little bit of an issue. But, you know, it's all in good fun. So anyway, you know, you basically configure these guys to accept, you know, as like a memory size. So you can run it anywhere really, in your cluster. And then what's happening is that it's all a giant shared memory system. And you can store things in it. And if like one box goes away, you lose a certain portion of your cache, but the whole thing sort of stays running. You know, if you lost both masters, that'd be bad. But you can actually like run multiple masters if you're completely insane. It's not persistent though. It's a total like LRU cache. There's some stuff I'd like to add to it, like more statistics to see like evictions and stuff like that, and maybe divide up the cache into different like classifications of objects, because you don't know if like one object is pushing other objects out of the cache because the cycle rate is extremely high. And anyway, there's all kinds of cool things. So basically, we store like all kinds of information in this, because otherwise we'd be pounding the heck out of MySQL. There's other interesting things about this, though, because basically, like, so you're caching it, so then when you you know, let's say you delete a user and you're just pulling them from the cache again so that you don't go away. So you have to like put hooks in later code to like, you know, when the user is naughty, you can like move them out of the cache as well as the database. And so there's like all these interesting things. On top of that, what we have this like proxy architecture, which sort of separates all of the separates all of your like SQL from your code, and we have like this templating system that's sort of our own, sort of like I'm a kernel programmer before I came here, so like I don't really know the like parallels and stuff like that, but I've heard of like Smarty for PHP or something like that, and you know it lets you include templates and like replace variables and do things based on the variables inside of your C++ code. So where was I going with that? Oh, so we have this system where you have like a database, and then you're having like you basically run a proxy on it, and you have your web service server. And as requests come in, instead of just doing directly SQL statements to the back end, it like makes a formed request to the back end. And what that sort of means that you can do is like let's just say you're pounding your database, right? Well, what you can do is you can decide to maybe put a like layer of like middleware in here. And this could be another service, and now it can ask this guy, and then this guy can actually, this guy may have a cache or may talk to DSDC and cache certain values or pre-compute things. It's actually pretty cool architecture. Amongst that, we also have other things for splitting load. So depending on an ID, we have a map. So we actually have multiple database servers, and depending on how we hash out your user ID, you're on multiple different servers. Let's see what else they do. That's pretty cool.
I just came up with one of the clients we've been dealing with recently that has a whole lot of round robining, but they need the persistent, you know, stickiness. And so it's, you know, that whole kind of gray area with like load balancing and clustering. You know, all the problems come up. Now, so let me just take a step back. So you're saying, okay. The MySQL end, you have the middleman.
Yeah.
That's actually determining based on what? On persistent user, on a whole number of factors in terms of where the query is going, or am I missing the point?
Okay. Effectively, what we have is this sort of container. It's not that difficult. It's a container object that specifies like a range. So. Let's say your user ID is like, you know, 100 or something like that, and then your other user ID is like 101. So we do like basically like a mod operation on it, and then that determines which backend server you're going to go to. So for instance, you may have like two RPC servers, and you may, because of like memory constraints, you want to store everything in memory, let's just say. So, you know, but you can't. But you can't fit it all in one box, so you need maybe multiple boxes. So let's just say we're going to split it up into two. So then based on hashing of this ID, we can basically say that some of them are on this machine and some of them are on that machine, which means that if we have multiple web servers and they all share the same config, if user 100 comes to any one of these guys, then the same hashing function is run, and he knows to actually contact the correct RPC server or correct database or correct whatever.
But it's not dynamic, the databases he's contacting, and it's not redundant.
So you're not actually
providing clustering in the back end with the databases. You're just putting them into different containers. You're doing A through M versus A through Z.
Yeah, I mean, we don't currently have it. I mean, we are. We're getting to be, a mid-sized operation, and we have about 30 machines, two racks, and we're doing all kinds of cool stuff. I mean, you know, but there's, the whole thing is that there's room to grow here. Like, one of the plans that I have is I'd like to deploy my SQL replication.
Cool.
And basically have replication from each database to these other machines, which is kind of an interesting idea, because for one thing, since this is all the live data, right, MySQL blows. It serializes your reads and writes. So let's just say our CEO, Sam, is like, hey, Alfred, I need to know all the users that have done this in the last day or so. I just can't say select star from profile where foo equals foo, because it'll like hold a lock on the table for like 5 minutes or something like that, and the whole website will stop because the writes are like posed. So there's this whole idea that like, well, what we're going to start doing is like running replication,
and it'll actually simplify our queries. Some of the other stuff we have to do is break up our queries. Like if we're going to do like an operation across a lot of users, we have to like chunk it up. Otherwise, the latency from the single operation can cause latency to our users, which is not so good. Let's see what else. We take advantage of DSDC for other stuff to do some sort of distributed computation, but you have to sort of be working for us to know about that, how that works. Effectively, we're able to hold our entire recent, in the last 6 months to a year, user database in memory, be able to do something along the lines of like compute how closely you guys would get along between you and 10,000 or even more. We didn't hit any limits, just 10,000 arbitrary number that I just picked, but it can basically calculate the intersection of, you know, what you are and what you want with someone else and see how good of a match you are. The guys I work for, Sam and Chris, are both Harvard math grads. Max is a PhD candidate at MIT. They're all into math, so there's all kinds of like graphs and cool stuff on the table, on the site. And, we basically have users answer tons of questions, and you say what you are, like, I smoke, I don't smoke, I smoke my drink, and then what you'd like your ideal match to say. And then you say how important it is. So you wind up with points and possible points. So, like, let's just say I, like, really want to, you know, I smoke, and I really want someone who doesn't smoke, and someone else, you know, doesn't smoke. Is that a match? If it's a match, I get 250 out of 250. If it's not, then I get 0 out of 250. Do that over a bunch, you get a actual ratio, you get a percentage. But then, depending on how many questions you answered, there's a skew. So, you know, if you'd only answer, like, one question, like, your graph looks something along the lines of like that. So we basically take like the lower bound of it. If your question is, but if you answer a lot, then we're actually pretty confident that you're a good match with the person. So then we say you're higher. We have enemy match too, which is great. I like went through my enemies recently. So basically the people that answer the most questions against the way that you would actually answer them, so they're actually upsetting to you, which is pretty cool. So I went through that and just like, told a bunch of girls, you're pretty cute, like, do you like motorcycles and other stuff that I'm into? And they were like, and I got very few responses. Although I got a response from one of them, she's pretty cute, so I'm excited about that.
We should do that right now. This would be really fun.
I mean, we have all kinds of other stuff we want to do. We want to add a chat front end to the site, we want to make things more robust, we want to make things faster and cooler, and we want to, you know, roll out features, and we have all kinds of crazy stuff going on.
Do you have an interface for the queries to go? So, like, is it you just taking the data on the live servers and running queries against that, or do you have, like, a second set of servers that's holding MySQL data that management can actually, like, sit there and run queries on?
That's what I want to do. But really, like, our live data is, like, basically right on these database servers that we're querying. So if we want to perform any kind of, like, analysis, we kind of have to chunk up the queries to, like, to grab little portions of it and then run it ourselves, which is kind of, like, not so much fun.
Yeah.
But we are, but when I have a minute to breathe, I'm going to be rolling out some MySQL replicas, which will give us the ability to do that. It will also give us the ability to shed load effectively because we'll be able to move the non-hyper-real-time stuff off to those guys. You know, I mean, for instance, for email, we can't have a user, at least the way I've been thinking about it, we can't have a user hitting one of the backend servers for reads and doing the writes through the front end, because if there's any kind of lag, we'll get a kind of inconsistent mailbox. I wonder what the heck is going on. But for things like displaying some other user's profile info, you know, if they update their profile and there's like a 3-second lag, we don't really care. Let's see, what else is kind of cool? I don't know, it's kind of cool. you can all sign up. Like, I thought I got a lot of action, but apparently the guys working for me get like twice as much from the site. It's like ridiculous.
Is there anything interesting to do with the web serving itself?
The web serving itself? How do you say? That's interesting. We have our custom web server. It's called OTWS. You can check it out. It's here. Hold on a minute. I'm gonna write some URL down.
You could specify this stuff out there.
OTWS.org is the OK web server, and then OKWS.
OKWS.
Yeah. Everything is okay at OKCupid. That's about common point there. Oh, that is also interesting too. We're actually like making money. Like we are actually making money, and we don't have investors or guys in suits like telling us what to do. We're doing pretty good. It's cool. So.
Do you have like equal magic guys and girls like using it?
It appears so. Yeah, I mean, like it's great. It's kind of funny, but just this last week, we supposedly got rid of the last adult-oriented ad from the site. So, and that was like our number one complaint from our female users was like, you're browsing the site and it's like, find sex partners in Brooklyn, and like that's gone. So like it's completely like, I mean, we've always been really cool. Like we have a newsletter. We respect bounces. We don't spam people. We don't do any of that stuff. And now like with the adult stuff gone, we're awesome. You know? So there seems to be a pretty even amount of people. So and I mean one of the cool things though is that it's like it actually helps you find people. So and their match percentages so are dependent on how many questions they've answered, so how much they've actually put into the website. So it's not like you're going to go in and like. Find like you know if you actually look for your best matches, it's not like you're gonna, you know, be just picture browsing, which is what pretty much all the other sites offer, and like click to email people that are like not even active on the site or haven't really cared through a profile or like not really whatever. These are people that actually are interested in being able to. So,
are your competitors like Friendster and MySpace?
I consider MySpace really lame. I'm sorry. I consider Friendster really lame, and I consider MySpace an abomination. Friendster is 3 years ago, and no one uses it. MySpace is the best way to crash Firefox that I've ever seen in my life. It's just a piece of crap. I mean, they're not competitors to us. There really is no one else in our space that's really doing anything. There's Match.com. But Match.com is a pay site. They're only to and you think they have ads everywhere, right? That they're huge. They only have 1 million subscribers. We're a quarter of the way there. We're free. We don't do any advertising. You see billboards for Match.com.
Where's your revenue from?
What?
Where's your revenue from?
The sex search ads. I mean from our ads. It's actually pretty cool. We also have a donation system, so. People can donate money to us, and they like. I think people give us like 5 or 10. Like, you can if you donate, you can buy yourself a bigger mailbox, or you can buy a friend a bigger mailbox, or you can turn off ads for yourself. But like, we get like some people just give us $100 at a time, which is pretty cool for a free site. It's really kind of interesting. Yeah. So we get like at least one $100 donation per week, which I think is pretty. Interesting. And we get emails about people, you know, we've at least like 7 marriages through the website, which is pretty cool. And we get funny stuff too. Like when I first started there, we got this email from some guy who was like, I'm the biggest dork, but you won't believe the girl I have in my bed right now. And he's
still running an email.
Yeah. I mean, like that kind of dork. Like, I mean, like right now, like he was not kidding.
Yeah, right now.
Right now, yeah. So, that was just awesome. helping socially retarded people hook up since like 2003. So that's great. So this is us.
Is that larger?
And that's me. And
is that OKCUPS?
Okay, CUPID. Okay, Cupid.
Oh.
Yeah, like a Cupid, like the guy. So, like, we have, like, we just deployed, like, like RT, so we use RT carbocapture, which is kind of nice. Yeah. I mean, like, we're like completely open source. We are looking into some other like partnerships for some like some other stuff to be like different based matching with people. So there's some like interesting developments going on there. But it's actually like supposed to be a Linux on Java, but it's like actually like running on FreeBSD now, so that's pretty cool.
You talked to Trish about that?
No.
You know, Greg Patnish?
I know. Yeah.
Because I mean, they're like basically they're doing right now is in 6.0, they're running Java all over the place.
Yeah, no, we're doing, what do you call it? We're doing it too. I was surprised. I mean, honestly, just Java on FreeBSD and it worked. That was like pretty.
We had a meeting on Trish did a few months ago.
Oh yeah.
So.
Oh cool. So the question was about. So somehow I got all the way sidetracked to this, and the question was about the web server. What is the web server? Web server is a custom web server written by Max. Its base is called SFS, which is what we actually use based almost all of our code on, which is a synchronous C++ based library for doing stuff. It basically, what it does is it lets you do like all kinds of crazy callbacks. It's not a threaded model. It's a callback model. So you register if you want interest in an event, and when that event occurs, you get a callback. So it's sort of like using libevent or you know, whatever you want to use the graphing key to or select list, basically, for me to do a select-based server. So what you wind up doing is it's sort of, now I'm not a Java programmer, so you can throw whiteboard markers at me if I'm wrong, but it's sort of like a servlet almost technology. So if you're going to write a CGI, it's like a fast CGI servlet kind of deal. So let's say I'm going to write a thing that displays user profiles. So I basically write a program called profile, and I define the methods and callbacks that I need. I'm going to inherit from some of our base classes so we can get connections to the database and all sorts of junk. And then what winds up happening is that it kind of looks almost like every single request coming in runs in a thread, but it's actually not a thread. It's sort of like this like single work context thing that when you want stuff to happen, you do callbacks. Max actually added this new thing called Ting lately, which is really cool. It's not called Ting, it's called Ting, but he added it lately. And it allows you to sort of abstract out the callback mechanisms. You can write code that looks like a synchronous call, like a synchronous blocking call. I guess you're going to get like 20 users, right? Normally you'd have to do something really like crazy, like get user, and then you'd say like you make up an array of, it's just like really complicated to have to do this, but actually now you can write synchronous code where you're just going to do a loop and block, which you can't do without threads, but Tame allows you to do that with our framework, which is pretty good. So you wind up with this persistent process that runs. It starts up, OTWS starts up, it reads a config file, and spawns your processes like profile and home for home screen and mail for the mail page, and as request comes in, it parses the request header from the HTML and decides to basically pass the file descriptor off to this process to handle it on its own. And what it lets you do is like cache a bunch of things like within this object, within this process basically. And then on top of one of the other important things for OKWS is that it's a secure web server. So it takes great pains to run every single separate process in its own, set you ID as like a different non-privileged ID, each one of them, and it runs all under a jail. And because it uses RPCs, C-Truth. It could do a jail. Because it runs, wait, you made me distracted by saying that.
RPC.
We've only had like 6 jailbreaks. Okay, so because of the RPC based nature of it, you can't do like an SQL based injection attack, which is kind of nice. I mean, I mean, you could if you were like really dumb and basically threw an RPC that had an SQL fragment into the back end, but typically you don't do that. I come and smash you with my helmet or something. So, it's pretty cool. We have like something like 3,000 simultaneous online users. One of the other things that we do besides like match people up, we have this whole test meme thing where people publish tests and you know, you answer a bunch of questions and you're like, oh, I, you know, what kind of Star Trek character would you be or something like that? You just answer a bunch of questions and then, you know, it gives you a code and you paste it into your live journal and then you cry about how much you hate your parents or something like that. So there's, it's sort of this like self-spreading mechanism that's pretty cool. You know, so, you know, people get these like, you know, could you be my boyfriend test? And I always like block that person because it's annoying. I forgot what test I made. I'm not that big of a user of the website, honestly. I'm more of a back-end kind of guy, so. but, you know, occasionally funny stuff pops up. That's great. But, yeah, we want to do a lot more, and there's no one in our space, and once we get big enough, free game, you know, there is online dating, but there's no one doing it for free that's, like, of actual our utility and, like, scalable and doable. And the fact of the matter is that once we get bigger, then it's going to screw everyone else, because what kind of model do they have when we have more users than they do, and you have to pay $20 to sign up for a smaller dating pool? There's no point to it. So, we have journals now, so people can cry about their parents on our site, too. That's really cool. And I think I'm soaking up a little bit too much in the meeting, but if anyone has any other questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
If somebody can't search, I mean, if you have like an advanced search, you can look for...
Like what?
What drugs they take or something?
What drugs they take and stuff like that? Actually, that's really cool. That's what the Java stuff is like going to be. Like, there's going to be some other stuff like that. I wrote the new matching system. Before, it was like all this MySQL thing that was like not really cool. So, you know, I need someone to come. I need a couple people actually to come. So we can all come over afterwards and code on the 50-50. so I can add that functionality. But yeah, you'll soon be able to search for people based on horniness, which is great. as you answer those multiple choice questions through rigorous analysis and beer drinking, we've determined that certain answers add certain attributes to your character. So, you know, depending on what you do, you may wind up being more aggressive or more horny or more intellectual or more whatever. And, more moral. It bothers me that I actually have the lowest moral rating on the site. It bothers my boss, too. But I don't know how that happened. I just answered him honestly. And I'm really all the way at the bottom. It's really frightening. So.
Oh, yeah, thank you. This seems less moral, better panic.
Yeah. So the more questions you answer, the better we know about you, the better we can compare people with you. And it actually is a really good pretty good indicator of whether or not you and this person are going to be able to like click or not.
Or if you discover that some of the questions maybe weren't quite right, how do you flexible your data in the future going to be with the old data?
Okay. That's an interesting question. We expect users to be somewhat active on the website. So, and the question system is dynamic. And if you answer, like, we have like about 2,000 active questions. So if a user answers, like, I think all of them or almost all of them, you can submit new questions to our queue, and every couple of weeks we like say, oh, that one's kind of cool, that one's kind of cool, whatever. So really our really dedicated users get to, like, pick these questions. What basically happens is though, I think I'm we basically phase out the old questions as new ones come in. So if we find like a better question set, you will actually lose some of your answers and effectively for doing matching. It just encourages you to answer more questions and click more and show more of our banners, I guess. So it's kind of cool. It's really kind of a fun place to work because it's like, you know, if you go to about us on the webpage, like, you know, all of our pictures are up there. You know, like, you get, like, recognition. Like, hey, Mom, I work at this site. Check it out. You know, it's like, it says you're horny and not moral. What's wrong with you? So,
my boy isn't really decadent.
I know. Look at your friends. If you're girls, we're not wearing any clothes. It's terrible. you know, and unlike MySpace and some of those other garbage sites, we basically have policies on our pictures. They are not draconian, but no nudity, and it has to be you. I mean, it just kicks me off to no end to like have someone comment in like some other online site that I'm on, and their icon is of like one of the Powderpuff Girls, and I'm like, what is that? So you actually, if someone puts a picture that aren't of them, then they get removed. On top of it, there's always like sort of bonuses that people get for putting up their own pictures and things like that. We have like a hot list and picture browsing and quick match. We put stuff up and there is a immediate feedback on it. We had this thing called Quick Match recently, and you just go and you have to have a photo uploaded, and once you do, then it enters you into the system, and you have selection criteria, and you just click like yes, I like this person, no, I don't, yes, I do, no, I don't, yes, I do, no. And if you click yes to, they're like, it actually sends them an email just saying someone in Quick Match likes you. So it's sort of this like secret crush kind of program, and then they can go in. If you actually have like a match, it actually emails you both. And I got a Quick Match, but I was like something broke, so I wasn't like really. She was like in Michigan or something like that. So we're actually adding like location based searching on it, and we also have some cool data structures that let you like find people based on location. Really cool, and you could learn all about that if you're into C++ programming or whatever. And we have some crazy stuff we're doing for admin stuff too. Anyway, okay.
You get free data from somebody like Google or something like that for location or other things that may come up.
What do you mean? I'm sorry.
Like integrate one of the Google apps?
Or something, yeah. For example, in Manhattan, like, I live in a part of Harlem called Sugar Hill, Hamilton Heights.
Yeah.
Okay. Some people just call it Harlem and look for an apartment or something. If somebody puts that in or something like that. That's just one thing that comes to mind quickly.
Or
location.
Well, we have a location database, and you're expected pretty much to put in like your actual what your name city is and state.
I'm lazy. I want to go across the street.
Well, I mean, you can pick users that are. You can say like, I want to match people that are within like 1 mile of me, I think, or maybe 5 is like whatever. But like, 5 miles is what you got in this city. Maybe it'll do 1 mile. That might work out.
I'm really horny.
OKCupid is a place for you because it's ridiculous. It's also pretty cool. We like have like communities around us, and it's interesting that people are so dedicated to our website. Like we had like there's an IRC channel that everyone's like hanging in pace defensive ass gear into, and they all cheer for it, which is great. And they'll topic the channel, the woo of the day. They'll find some weird person online, and just random people will just like, you can woo people, basically. I don't know. If you see someone's profile, I think they're cute, you can click a button, and they'll send them an email that says, woo, this person thinks you're hot, and you can block woos because people hate that. But, and then there's a live journal community for us. And that's pretty cool.
You think, this is kind of a general technology question, but, or not even kind of a technology, but, do you think we're at that point again, like, in 98? The 97, where it's like, the hip technology stuff. And I don't mean like you guys are .com-ish, but I mean just in terms of using like, VSDs, for instance, where it's like, I remember that fuzz. I remember like my buddies at Netscape. I remember my buddies at Sun. I remember my buddies, at all these places. Do you see the same excitement around technology today and how much of an opening is it? I mean, I'm not saying we've heard it's like wave the BSD flag thing in the midst of it, but it certainly gives a boom again. To our
There's definitely a boom going on. I get like 2 or 3 recruiters like every week, at least like so there's like tons of jobs out there. But I mean like we're the only place that's offering a cool job. So there's kind of like there's like 7 of us, I'd say. There's 7 of us. We're looking to hire like probably 4 to 8 people pretty soon.
We are on 23rd and North Street between 56. We're going to move to a bigger office. We have a cool office with a skylight and everything.
North to south side of the street.
I can't go up that. No. we are on the north side.
Question about the BSC side of things. Like, are you guys, like, how do you guys keep current?
Excellent. And do
you?
You want my master single user mode?
I don't even want to go there. All right. We are running 6.1 pre-release as of, like, last week. Why are we doing that? We were running FreeBSD 5.2.1 when I first got there. This was very, very bad. Our web servers rebooted. The baby Jesus cried. It was just not good. Eventually, what happened was I started testing FreeBSD. This is a very funny story, actually. We used something called SUP to distribute files. I'd heard of it before, but I never actually seen it in practice, and I really hope never see the practice again. But it works out pretty good. We basically spam over the entire box using SUP. I mean, we have certain like exclusion rules and things like that, but we have like... Who knows what SUP is?
I just found out what SUP is because it was an updating package for us. I finally built the next student machine and I started playing with SUP.
Yeah.
But it was all local. I didn't do distributing for stuff.
Okay. So
like home.
So basically you have one machine, you give it a config file, and you tell it to basically look in certain directories, omit certain directories, do certain things, do da da da. And then it builds up a scan list of all your files, like reside, like get a bunch of attributes about them. And then you like can configure it like who can actually download from them, use a password, use or whatever. There's some other machines that basically synchronize with that. Typically it's used to synchronize like a source tree. But now we have tools like rsync and CVSup, and now there's something called CSup. But we actually use it to actually blast our machines out with combiners. So, So like, let's just say I want to install Java. So I install. So we have like a base machine called Stage One. We install Java on it, and then from any of the other machines in the cluster that needs it, we run SUP, I rerun the SUP scan tool on Stage Zero, and then it picks up all the new files that appear, and then I run SUP on the remote host, and it basically pulls all the changed files over. It's relatively fast. It's relatively scary. When you see libc being updated, it's kind of frightening. it was kind of tragic one day because what had happened was I updated the stage zero of the SUP machine to 3DSC 5.4. And when SUP fails, it just sort of keeps retrying in the background. So this is very funny when someone decides to re-enable the SUP server on the cluster, and you don't know that every box is running the SUP process, you need to reconnect to it to blast your entire cluster in the middle of like Tuesday at like 10 a.m. So, you know, that's how we upgraded to 3DSC 5.4, which is interesting. No, it just was like, you know, like Max was like, we had basically rolled out another machine to the cluster or like restoring it or something. So to basically update it, we just turned the SUP file server back on. We didn't realize that the other guys were all just waiting, banging at the door for this to occur. And then it was very interesting. It was a long time, you know. To address the security problems in OpenSSH, we went to 5.5. And then we had ETA problems, and that made me sad, so we switched to 6.1. And that was all controlled and done, but we basically used the SUP to do that. And we're pretty happy with 6.1. The cool thing is finally 6.1 release apparently was going to have a keyboard mux in it, which is kind of cool because that means if I boot my machine in the data center without a keyboard plugin, I will actually be able to plug a keyboard into it and use it later on, unlike the current behavior, which is lame as hell. That's that.
What made you go to SUP, out of curiosity? Because because it's funny, because obviously you see CVSup, just thinking about local machines, CVSup, CVSync,
yeah,
you know, played the kind of that game, but it was really package source. When I just turned package source the other day, I'm like, huh, let's see how this.
There's definite.
There's not even in the ports.
something important.
It is okay.
Yeah. It's like ancient though, and it's like horrible, and like when things aren't going wrong, it just like hangs, and you're like, what? So yeah. I'm like running trust on it or cage trace to figure out what's going on. It's really awesome.
Do you ever look at RMD?
Sorry?
RMD?
Yeah.
It does the same thing. I was just wondering.
I never heard of it. I've been with OKCupid for nearly a year at this point, but the site's about 3 years old. I've given put the stuff into place. It is very frightening, and we have been hosed by it a couple times in interesting ways. But it also solves a lot of problems that are like, you know, kind of endemic, I forget the word, with non-image based solutions. You know, you're on one box and you're like, okay, I'll install the port. And then for some reason on that box, you're like hacking around one day and you change some header file in a weird way. And it just won't install on the machine. Like, you'll get some compilation error and you take like a half an hour to figure it out. And it's like, well, you know what? If I'm going to install Java, well, also, I don't want to compile it on those other hosts. I guess I can make a package. Then it's like a little bit nerve-wracking. Do I have the right prerequisites? Like, what are you doing? It sort of like eliminates all that doubt. You're just going to get the machine right, which is interesting. I would like to have like a package-based system. It's also a little bit problematic because it's like, you know, now we have Java across our whole cluster. And really, you're on that four machine. So, like, but, you know, hey, Java's cool to have around, right? I don't love it, but it serves a purpose. If someone were to come work for us, then and they thought that they had a much better solution to talk about it, and you'd probably roll it out because if it basically solved these problems, then that'd be great.
So I'm just kind of curious how you went, because I think a lot of people went through the FreeBSD stuff going from like 4, 9, or 10. And then when they made the leap to 5, and then like panic jumped to 6. I mean, I think that kind of checked the trajectory with a lot of people. You said specifically open SSH and APA, but you just like overnight said, you know, goodbye 5.5.
I know a bunch of people at Yahoo. I know Peter Wen, Paul Saab, Mohan, they're using Yahoo is deploying FreeBSD 6 now. Six whatever. They have their own private tree, and they do like patches to it, and they like watch for like weird stuff that would break them and things like that. I also don't have the time to do that. So I just say, hey, Paul, how's FreeBSD like? He says, dude, you really want to go to 6.1. And I'm like, you're just such a bastard. Go, okay. So that's sort of how the thought process went. So,
that sounds very talkative.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, like, you know, like.
Down and do it.
Yeah. I know. No, like, it was like, we had like, you know, like, yeah, I had to go through 8 layers of change management and like, okay, with this guy. No, it's not how it works. We're a small shop. We are really a startup. We're going to be a successful one.
I don't know. The answer you're giving is kind of what I thought. But you're saying, like, open SSH problem, APA problem, therefore this. So.
Yeah, I mean, and also we really had it, because basically I could have hand-patched FreeBSD 5.4, but I've done that before. I have this source tree out on, like, previous incarnations, but FreeBSD 6 is supposedly so much better, it's supposed to be faster. I mean, it was just like, well, we'll throw it on a couple, like, you know, it looked like we just blasted the whole cluster, that we threw it on, you know, the staging box, and like, that just, you know, runs everything, but you know, that was okay. I threw it on, I actually installed FreeBSD 6 by doing a make world on a couple of other machines, I forget which ones exactly off the top of my head, let that run for about a week or so. No panics, no AT errors, no OpenSSH security vulnerabilities yet. I was like, right, this is cool. I tried a couple more machines, you know, into the mix. Then I finally upgraded the staging box. And then I started, you know, I waited a bit and then started stuffing out to the other machines. It was like gradual, you know, I mean, we're not totally fast and loose and crazy. We try to keep the site up as much as possible. Things happen though. So. I mean, 6 was pretty much like 5 was sucking, and we wanted to make sure things were supported. And I mean, you know, we talked earlier how I was a little bit upset how the way FreeBSD was going. I'm sorry.
George,
yeah. Okay. I was like, hey, I had this problem in FreeBSD 5, and developers were like, well, you can use 6, or you can just get bent. And I was like, okay, so.
I don't want to use Linux, so all right. I'll go to six. I guess it's still supported. That's
what we did. Right. Was 5.2.1 the worst operating system ever to be released?
No, 5.5 was. Non-functioning ETA is completely bullshit.
Oh,
I would not upgrade to previous.
Did anybody 5.5? Use 5.5? Because I didn't even touch 5.5.
I was just not. And the response from the developers was too bad. And I was like, this is supposed to be the stable release. Like 6.1 is sort of like early adopters still at this point. But that's the response that I got. And I used to hack on FreeBSD quite a bit. I kind of was the kernel janitor and like porting a bunch of things. And like I ported like pthread cancellation in and worked on, you know, bringing the new TI-RPC stuff in and hacked on some of the, MBUF stuff and fixed NFS. And everyone cries me about NFS all the time and things like that. But I just haven't had the time because like there's a whole lot of stuff going on to keep it. I mean, occasionally I'll like read a man page and I'll notice a typo and I fix that. That's about it. It's kind of unfortunate, but it's kind of cool.
Well, I mean, I think this actually might be useful for discussion because I know most people have been in this conversation, but like when Scott Mullen spoke, I guess, more than a year now at BSD Camp, and he did his little spiel on where FreeBSD is going, and then, 4.10 had just come out, 4.11 had just come out, or whatever the hell it was. Then, 5.4 was on its way out, and, there was discussions about the problems in 5.2.1 and 5.3, and then 6.0 was being worked on, and then, but then all of a sudden you have 7.0, and it becomes, where is the attention? Well, probably 7.0, because who wants to be part of, the branch that died last year, So that just seemed like an immediate problem.
So 5.2.1 was the holy fuck what branch. 5.4 was okay. 5.5 was bad. And 6.1 was good. So I would suggest, but you have to, when you're doing upgrade like this, you just have to test it. You have to have some kind of side or framework and plan to back that out in case there's actually a problem. Yeah, 5.4 was remarkably stable for us. I mean, I potentially would have been totally happy just patching OpenNet SSH by hand, but I just kept hearing all this really good stuff about 6.1, and I figured 5.4 plus one extra minor revision would be even better, but it wasn't. So that's how that happened. Yeah. Yeah. If I had the choice right now, if I had the ability to, I would have probably looked at the next 4.10 up until recently, and probably might actually still be running 4.10 actually. But you know what? The SMP in 6 is actually really good. We're creating a really, really, really good performance side of it.
I think outside of SMP, 4.10 was
pretty crappy. Yeah. Oh, we have some other cool stuff too, like in the office, like distributed availables, and it's amazing because we actually support Unix printing as of today in the office, so if you have a Unix box, you can print. We run through GC on our desktops. So we do all kinds of crazy stuff. Are we all happy?
What? Have you run into the directory bad blog?
The DRR bad?
Yeah.
It's actually kind of funny because we have one of the things we don't really do, we don't do lots of metadata operations under FreeBSD. Like, we have our image servers that run Apache, but we're not doing a lot of, directory data, so we really don't see panics like that. I've heard of it, and I actually distinctly remember hearing about a fix for it going into
I opened the blog report for that.
Okay. I mean,
I don't know if it works. I've been running the fix, the patch that Matt Jones came up with.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I ported this previous and uploaded the patch.
Okay.
But I have no idea if it actually fixes it or not. I haven't caught the bug since. But.
Well, you have to decide yourself. If you're catching every day and now you're not catching it for a week, then the bug is gone.
Yeah,
I mean, that's my testing.
I'm losing my nerves and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, like, there was just some other stuff that prompted me to go to 6, which is just, like, I saw this, like, cool, like, all these fixes for, like, snapshots and stuff like that going that were actually a little bit frightening, like, you know, deadlocks if you're doing snapshots and crap like that, and, you know, I don't know, it just seemed like an appropriate thing to do. Cool.
Thanks. So how should we proceed? Max, you want to go into your thing, or should we go to the bar? Where are you at, Max? Are you ready to explain SMB? SMB?
No, it was actually a question. It wasn't an explanation, because I tried getting it to work for 2 days.
Well, why don't you tell us what we can talk.
It's really simple. It's trying to get a FreeBSD box with Samba 3 to talk to Active Directory domain. Relatively useless, but we had a problem, you know, where a client wanted to drop files on the machine that was the only BSD box in their entire network. They asked me if it was Linux. I said no, and they asked me if it was DOS-based. So I was just wondering if anybody actually managed to do that successfully, because Samba manual uses like 10 commands that supposedly does it, and what doesn't. And Google doesn't say about much either, so...
There's any you saw about on FreeBSD?
Like, for example, Kerberos, the machine synchronizes over NTP to the domain controller on that network. But Kerberos complains that clocks are out of sync, they're not, you know, things like that. Like, it shows up in the Active Directory as a machine, you can see the shares.
Update.
It never imports the usual list. So.
Not in sight.
So, yeah, that's my problem. Exactly. So, anybody ever get that working? Totally as possible.
I don't like answering to Windows users, so I try not to run Samba, but we rerun Samba as a client to print to a Windows box, and that's about it.
Yeah. Well, if I ever figure it out, I'll let you guys know.
That's something that we, in the works, and let's say one of our projects to do here at Beirut.
Mm-hmm.
To
actually, yeah.
To have some type of single sign-on using AD.
Yeah.
AD as LDAP backend. And I've gotten it to work without Samba, but just based on Kerberos and using PAM. So we don't really have any machines to test actually using Samba. So basically, when we get to that stage,
Kerberos, yeah.
When we test it with Samba, then I'll drop something on the list and said, you know,
that's cool.
Out to our, yeah. Got to actually work.
Yeah, we have to get this thing to work too, because otherwise, it'll be like WebDAO or FTP or something stupid that I know they're not going to like. So, it's going to have to talk to Active Directory sooner or later.
I mean, it all depends. I mean, if you're just using shares.
It's shares, but it's for. It's for a whole bunch. It's for a department, and they need to be able to control different things on that share. So, you know, it's easier to do that over existing authentication infrastructure than to sit there and create Unix groups that you're going to have to manually synchronize with Active Directory because people come and go, you know. The whole thing is already there. Just, you know, BSD has to be able to talk to
you. What about, I'm not sure if you could install Samba 4 in FreeBSD because I haven't tried, but Samba 4 should fix a lot of issues.
Actually, this is 3 from ports, and you can select the Active Directory and Kerberos.
Yeah, 3 not really.
If you look at the Microsoft services for years.
What was that?
Briefly, like years ago, what I remember it was like Telnet, Daemon.
Yeah,
that's
PTT.
You know what?
Yeah,
you can do that too.
It's actually in the new service back for 8 for. Windows 2003.
Yeah.
The services for Unix is actually
it's more than
a it's not a separate component anymore. It's when you install the service pack, it actually installs that. So something you could definitely look into. And then you could do NI.
If you don't want to use NIST too, if you don't install it, you can't get you can get a UID that works and you need like.
We basically just need users and their passwords.
Yeah. Like, you install a service for Unix, so it gives you, like also just a password. So you don't have to use just Microsoft's password.
But it's still going to get out of the Active Directory, though.
Yeah, it generates it from.
Okay.
I mean, we'll lose some security because you encrypt it.
It's a local network. It's really a convenience thing for me. That's pretty cool, yeah. That's all right. If I ever get it to work, I can let you guys know.
I had one other question. I just got. I was in California for about 5 years up until this last year. So, I used to hang out with a bunch of, like, biker goths, which happened, half of them happen to be, like, sysadmins and stuff like that. So, if any of you guys know of any kind of groups like that, I'd like to know about it. Cause
biker sysadmins?
Yeah. Yeah, or, like, biker coders or something like that. I mean, like, it was funny because we'd all be, like, hanging out and, like, kind of scary looking. People would, like, you know, step on the side of the road for us and stuff. And then we'd be, like, going to the bar and then, like, five, like, you know, those little head tops would come out and crap like that. And it's like, we're such dorks.
Well, the whole, like, DBA and FBSD thing.
What do you
know about that?
No, no.
Like every Thursday night, like a bunch of FBSD developers for years gotten together at a. Except Mickey was the other. Plus Mickey, I should say. We'd get together at DBA. Now they actually go to Flanagan's on the west side, West 46.
Uh-huh.
But that is not a crowd of people. Like, Christos is probably the most intimidating one.
Alright.
But, like, everybody's pretty, like. That's as close as it gets. Maybe the old funny and friendly ones. Like that, but I never went to a meeting.
Okay. Nah, I was looking for other guys on two wheels, so hang out.
Alright. Cool. Yeah. 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 Alright, maybe on that note, well,
I got one unrelated announcement. Since we all need batteries all the time, Family Dollar sells this thing on charges of 4 batteries for $10.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, and the last thing.